ナモ妙法蓮華経、ナモ妙法蓮華経、ナモ妙法蓮華経。Hello, friends. Thanks for being here. Thank you for your practice. It's an honor and a privilege to have these times with you where I can read, annotate, analyze the Lotus Sutra with you. There's a lot more to Nichiren's doctrine than simply the Lotus Sutra, but we are Lotus Sutra Buddhists. So, as we continue our study of the Lotus Sutra, we begin a new chapter, chapter 12, Devadatta, Renge, and the Enlightenment of Women. It is raining here in Mississippi, so I hope you will not let the noise in the background bother you. It's pretty slight right now. It's just occasional little cloud bursts and that little rhythm of the rain gutters downspout, in case you're wondering what that sound is. At that time, the Buddha addressed the bodhisattvas, the celestial beings, and the four groups, basically the entire assembly, yeah? And he said the following: through innumerable kalpas of the past, I have tirelessly sought the Lawflower Dharma Sutra. During many kalpas, I was long a king and vowed to seek the Supreme Bodhi. Right, Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. My mind never faltering. Desiring to fulfill the six paramitas, I earnestly bestowed alms with an unsurpassing mind, elephants, horses, rare seven gems, right, the precious seven gems, countries, cities, wives, children, male and female slaves, servants and followers, head, eyes, marrow, brain and flesh of my body, hands and feet, unsurpassing, unsparing of my body and life. So, at the beginning of this statement, you might well be a bit confused when he talks about, you know, perfecting the paramitas and so forth. He's perfecting the very things he's teaching his students to perfect. So this is Siddhartha Gautama taking on his mission, clearly stated at the start, to find the answer to human suffering, to find the answer to our lifetime, this lifetime, and how to live it to the full without the obstacles of pain, suffering, illness, so on and so forth. And he's dedicating as he was a prince, so he was to be the next king, yeah? So he gave all of that up and all of his possessions, his elephants, horses, so on and so forth. That's what this statement is about. When I left the household and all of the responsibilities that entails to pursue this life of finding, realizing, understanding, enlightenment, which is what we call it now, this is my level of commitment. I gave away all my possessions, which is the samsaric I, must identify self through what my possessions, right? Oh, he has all that wealth, all that stuff. He must be a very important person. Right? Identity, we tie identity to stuff, our own to begin with. And then he says, unsparing of my entire body, hands, feet, whatever. I need this answer. This is the level of my determination, right? For the sake of the law, I gave up the throne of my domain. Deputed my government to the crown prince, and with beating drum and open proclamation sought everywhere for the truth. And now I make a promise, promising whoever is able to tell me of a great vehicle, I will all my life provide for him and be his footman. Again, a declaration of his intent. At that time, a certain hermit came to me, the king, and said the following. I have a great vehicle named Wonderful Law Flower Dharma Sutra. If you will not disobey me, I will explain it to you. I, the king, hearing what the hermit said, became ecstatic with joy and instantly followed him. Of course. I'll do whatever you wish, yeah? Providing for his needs, gathering fruit, drawing water, collecting fuel, laying his food, even turning my body into his seat and bed, yet never feeling fatigued of body or mind. Because the payoff is so amazing, yeah? While I thus served, a millennium passed. And for the sake of the law, I zealously waited on him that he should lack nothing. That's some patience, 1,000 years, yeah? Then the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this meaning over again, spoke thus in verse. I remember in past kalpas, when to seek the great law, though I was a king in the world, yet coveted not earthly pleasures. With toll of bell, I proclaimed to the four quarters, whoever possesses the great law, if he will expound it to me, to him I will become a servant. Then there was the sage Asita, who came and said to the great king, I possess the wonderful law, rarely heard in the world. If you are able to practice it, I will teach it to you. Then the king, hearing the sage's words, conceived great joy in his heart, and thereupon followed him, providing for his needs, gathering fuel, fruit, and gourds, and in season, reverently offering them. Keeping the wonderful law in my heart, body, and mind, were unwearied. Universally for all living beings, I diligently sought the great law, not indeed for my own sake, not for the delight of the five desires, the skandhas, yes? So I, king of the great domain, by zealously seeking, obtained this law, and as last became a Buddha. Now, therefore, I teach it to you. The Buddha said to all the bhikshus and bhikshunis, the former king was myself, and the sage at that juncture was the present Devadatta himself. What? Devadatta? He tried to steal the Sangha away from you. He tried to have you killed. He sent that same Devadatta. Through the good friendship of Devadatta, I was enabled to become perfect in the six paramitas, in kindness, compassion, joy, and indifference. And indifference, you should know, is kindness or benevolence. Compassion, joy, and upeksha, or the state of absolute indifference attained by renouncing any exercise of the mental faculties. These four are termed the four kinds of infinite mind or infinite virtues, the four guiding rules for human society. Almsgiving, kind speech, helpful conduct, and mutual service. We'll come up to that in a moment. So indifference not being, today we use that word as though it means sort of an insult, but indifference really in its actual meaning means unperturbed, uninfluenced, right? I talk about this a lot. In the 32 signs, the 80 kinds of excellence, the deep golden-hued skin, the 10 powers, the 4 kinds of fearlessness, the 4 social laws, which I just read to you, the 18 special unique characteristics, the transcendent powers of the way, the attainment of perfect enlightenment, and a widespread saving of the living. All this is due to the good friendship of Devadatta. This is an important lesson, because sometimes the people that challenge us most, that we would samsarically view as enemies, are actually, it depends on your karma, it may be the push that one needs in order to rediscover what oneself truly is. Whatever Devadatta provided for Shakyamuni or Siddhartha was a further depth of conviction that perfect enlightenment would end whatever stresses he felt from Devadatta. So in that way, Devadatta actually spurned his depth, Shakyamuni's depth, of practice and understanding of the universal law. Myoho Renge Kyo. Fascinating. I declare to all of you, 4 groups, Bhikshunis, Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasikas, yeah. Devadatta, after his departure and innumerable kalpas have passed, will become a Buddha. Really? Even Devadatta? Wow. Whose title will be King of the Universal Realms of Influence, Tathagata. Worthy of praise, all wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well departed, understander of the world, peerless leader, controller, teacher of the universal realms of influence, and men, a Buddha, world-honored one, and whose world will be named Transcendent Ways. At that time, the Buddha King of the universal realms of influence shall dwell in the world for 20 intermediate kalpas. He shall widely teach the wonderful law for all the living, and living beings, numerous as the sands of the Ganges, will attain arhatship. Innumerable beings will devote themselves to pratyeka buddhahood, and living beings, numerous as the sands of the Ganges, devoting themselves to the supreme way, will attain to the assurance of no rebirth and reach the stage of never falling back into mortal life, samsaric life. Then, after the parinirvana of the Buddha King of the Universal Realms of Influence, the right Dharma law will dwell in this world during 20 intermediate kalpas. For his complete body relic, a stupa of the precious 7 jewels shall be erected, 60 yohanas in height, and 40 yohanas in length and width. All the Universal Realms of Influence and people, with various flowers, sandal powder, incense for burning, perfumed unguents, garments, garlands, banners, flags, jeweled canopies, you know the rest. Respectfully salute and pay homage to the wonderful stupa of the precious 7 jewels. Innumerable living beings will attain arhatship, including living creatures, will awaken to pratyeka buddhahood, and inconceivable number of living will be aroused to Bodhi, Buddhahood in the form of Bodhisattva, and reach the stage of never falling back into samsara, in other words, trapped in the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. And the Buddha said, so this is an indication, by the way, that the teaching of the 3 lesser vehicles is still going on. Right. This all changes with the 5th 500-year period after Shakyamuni's extinction. But for now, sometimes those lesser vehicles need to be taught for people who aren't ready for the ultimate truth. But remember, this is 3,000 years ago, yeah? I'm rounding up, but you understand what I'm saying. And as you will see as we progress in the Lotus Sutra, in this future time, you guys ain't gonna make it. We need a new kind of bodhisattva 2,500 years from now. The bodhisattva of the lotus. We'll get to it. The Buddha said to the bhikshus, bhikshunis, if there be in a future world any good son or good daughter to hear this Devadatta chapter of the wonderful Law Flower Dharma Sutra with pure heart and accepting reverence and is free from doubt, such a one shall not fall into the hells or become a hungry spirit or animal, but shall be born into the presence of the Buddhas of the universe. Wherever he be born, he will always hear this sutra, and if he be born amongst men in universal realms of influence, he will enjoy marvelous delight. As to the Buddha into whose presence he is born, his birth shall be by emanation from a lotus flower. Now, that sounds very fable-like, yes? But consider this. Why is the lotus flower the great Dharma symbol of this teaching? I mean, very simply, when the lotus flower blossoms, when it becomes a flower, it, at the same time, the pod in that lotus releases its seed. Remember the seed of Buddhahood? What is the seed of Buddhahood according to Nichiren? Myoho Renge Kyo. The awakening of the Gohonzon mind, the opening of the Buddha eye. So don't miss the analogy here. We are the lotus. And when we invoke the seed, we cannot possibly not invoke at the same time Buddha, the blossom. So when we chant Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, the seed of Buddhahood, we achieve Buddhahood. It's an invocation. It happens at the same moment. The blossom and the seeding, same time. So let me read that sentence again and see if you don't get it. As to the Buddha into whose presence he is born, his birth, Buddha, shall be by emanation from a lotus flower, the seed. Thereupon a bodhisattva attendant from a region beneath of the world, honored one, abundant treasures, named Wisdom Accumulation, said to the Buddha, abundant treasures, let us return to our own land. But Shakyamuni Buddha said to the Wisdom Accumulation, good son, wait a while. Here is the Bodhisattva Manjushri. First meet and discuss with him the wonderful law, and then return to your own land. Thereupon Manjushri, sitting on a 1,000-petal lotus flower, as large as a carriage wheel, with the bodhisattvas who accompanied him also sitting on jeweled lotus flowers, unaided, sprang up from the great ocean, out of the palace of the Sagara dragon that ruled the seas, king, taking up his place in the sky, he advanced to the transcendent vulture peak, alighted from his lotus flower, went before the Buddha and reverently made reverence at the feet of the two world-honored ones, Shakyamuni and Taho, or abundant treasures, as he's called here. When he had expressed his reverence, he went over to the Wisdom Accumulation, Bodhisattva, or Buddha, and after they had asked each other's welfare, they withdrew and sat to one side. The Bodhisattva of Wisdom Accumulation asked Manjushri, okay, virtuous sir, since you went to the Dragon Palace, how many beings have you converted? And Manjushri answered, their numbers are immeasurable. They cannot be calculated, nor expressed in words, nor fathomed by the mind. Just wait a moment. One must bring the proof. Before he had finished speaking, numberless bodhisattvas sitting on jeweled lotus flowers sprang up from the sea, advanced to the transcendent vulture peak, and took up their place in the sky. All these bodhisattvas had been converted and emancipated by Manjushri, had become perfect in bodhisattva deeds, and together discussed and expounded the six paramitas. Those in the sky who had formerly been shravakas told of their former shravaka deeds, but now they all maintained the spiritual principle of the great vehicle. Then said Manjushri to Wisdom Accumulation, such has been the result of my course of instruction in the ocean. Then the Bodhisattva Wisdom Accumulation extolled him thus in verse. Most wise, virtuous, brave, and strong one, you have converted innumerable meanings, as now this great assembly and I have all seen. Expounding the principle of reality and revealing the one vehicle law. Extensively have you led living beings to attain with speed Bodhi. Manjushri replied, that which I, in the midst of the ocean, always proclaimed was no other than the wonderful Law Flower Dharma Sutra. Wisdom Accumulation asked Manjushri, this sutra is very profound and subtle, the jewel of all the sutras, a rare thing in the world. Is there any being who, diligently and zealously practicing this sutra, can attain speedily Buddhahood? Manjushri replied, there is the daughter of the dragon king, Sagara, just 8 years old, wise and of keen faculties, well acquainted with the karma arising from the roots of action of all creatures, who has obtained Dharani, has been able to receive and keep all the most profound and a priori treasures revealed by Buddhas, and has deeply entered into meditations and penetrated into all laws. In a moment of time, she resolved on Bodhi and attained non-relapse into samsara. She has unembarrassed powers of argument and compassionate mind for all the living, as if they were her children. Her merits are complete, and the thoughts of her mind and explanations of her mouth are both subtle and great. Kind and compassionate, virtuous and modest, gentle and beautiful in her disposition, she has been able to attain Bodhi. The Bodhisattva Wisdom Accumulation said, I have seen how Shakyamuni, Tathagata, during innumerable kalpas, in doing arduous and painful deeds, accumulating merit and heaping up virtue, sought the way of Bodhi ceaselessly and without rest. I have observed that the 3,000 great thousandfold world, there is not even a spot as small as a mustard seed where he has not laid down his body and life as a bodhisattva for the sake of the living. And only after that did he attain Bodhi. It is incredible that this girl, in but a moment, should become perfectly enlightened. Yeah? Who are you trying to fool here? This ain't easy. This takes a lifetime of work, right? Before he had ceased talking, the daughter of the Dragon King suddenly appeared before them, and after making reverent reverences to the Buddha, withdrew to one side, extolling him in verse. Little 8-year-old girl. Profound of insight into error or delusion and fortunateness, he illuminates the universe. Tathagata. His spiritual body, ethereal and pure, has the 32 perfect signs, with the 80 kinds of excellence, is his spiritual body adorned. He to whom universal realms of influence and men look up, dragons and spirits pay reverence, and all species of living beings do revere and honor. That, having heard the truth, I attained Bodhi, only the Buddha may bear witness. I will reveal the teaching of the great vehicle which delivers creatures from suffering. Thereupon Shariputra said to the daughter of the Dragon King, you state that in no length of time you attain the supreme way. This thing is hard to accept. Shariputra makes his reappearance, right? For what reason? Because the body of a woman is filthy and not a vessel of the law, right? That misogyny, right? How can she attain supreme bodhi? I mean, forget that you did it quickly, little 8-year-old girl, but you're female. What is this nonsense, right? The Buddha way is so vast that only after passing through innumerable kalpas, enduring hardship, accumulating good works, and perfectly practicing the perfections can it become accomplished. So Shariputra here is reverting to his old ways, isn't he? Of the lesser vehicles. I thought early on in the Lotus Sutra, he got that slapped out of his mind, right? He accepted that enlightenment was for this lifetime. What happened? He's using his old ways to talk down this little 8-year-old girl. See, you don't have the stamina or the endurance for this, right? Moreover, a woman by her body still has 5 hindrances. She cannot become first king of the Brahma heaven, second Shakra, third and Mara king, fourth a revered wheel rolling king, and fifth a Buddha. How then could a woman's body so speedily become a Buddha? Go away, little girl, with your fanciful thoughts, yeah? Wow, I'm surprised Shariputra slipped back into his old habits so quickly. Work is not done. Now, the dragon's daughter possessed a precious jewel worth 3,000 great thousandfold world, which she held up and presented to the Buddha, and which the Buddha immediately accepted. Oh, thank you. The dragon's daughter then said to Bodhisattva Wisdom Accumulation and the honored Shariputra, I have offered my jewel and the world-honored one has accepted it. Was this action speedy? They both answered, well, most speedy, yeah. And the daughter said, by your supernatural powers, behold me, become a Buddha even more rapidly than that. What? At that moment, the entire congregation saw the dragon's daughter suddenly transformed into a male, perfect in bodhisattva deeds, who instantly went to the world of spotlessness in the southern quarter, where she sat on a precious lotus flower, attained perfect enlightenment, Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, with the 32 signs and the 80 winds, or kinds, I'm sorry, the 80 kinds of excellence, and universally proclaiming the wonderful law to all the living creatures in the universe. Just like that. Now, mind you, 3,000 years ago, I didn't miss the part where she suddenly transformed into a male in order to get to Buddhahood. This is a teaching trying to reach the minds of these stubborn traditionalists who won't accept that a woman can become a Buddha, and so she changes her genitals for a moment on her way just to stick it to them, put it, you know what I'm saying. It's not necessary, ladies. You don't need to do that. This is just a figurative tale to just sort of rub it in the face of misogyny, if you will. Then the Saha world, of which they're all in, floating in the sky nonetheless, of bodhisattvas, sravakas, the 8 groups of universal realms of influence and dragons, and human and non-human beings, all from afar, beholding the dragon's daughter become a Buddha, and universally teach the law to universal realms of influence, men and others, amongst the congregation, that congregation in that land. All rejoiced greatly and made reverent salutations from afar. The countless multitude, on hearing her teach the law, so female, were aroused to apprehension and attained, never sliding back into mortality. The countless multitude also received their prediction of the perfect and complete way. The world spotless made the sixfold movement. 3,000 living beings in the Saha world took up their abode in the stage of never returning to mortality or samsara. That's an important point, by the way, mortality here. Because the very act of samsaric mind, of attachment and possession, is what creates the end, the mortality, right? When you separate yourself from samsara, you're in moment to moment. The idea of an end, it's not a preoccupation. I've often said this last vestige of attachment to the body is the fear of death, of not having a body. And so this is all the rhetoric about letting that body go is about this attachment. Be in the flow of life, in the momentum of life. Birth and death are just irrelevant here in being. That's why the use of that word. While 3,000 living beings set their minds on Bodhi and obtained the prediction of attaining it. The Bodhisattva wisdom accumulation in Shariputra and all the congregation silently accepted. Wow. Kind of blown away here. Yeah. So here I have a lengthy annotation, because this is I skipped something here. No, we're there. Sorry. All right. This chapter is named for Devadatta. Devadatta is certainly worth some acclaim as a character of exceptional bad intent, as a monk who lobbied the entire community of monks to rebel against Shakyamuni in order that he, Devadatta, was to take over the community. Devadatta further attempted to injure and even to murder Shakyamuni Buddha. To offer this prediction, Shakyamuni Buddha showed immense compassion and provided the example that no matter what a person's previous errors, delusions, and terrible causes, should they turn toward the priority law of Myoho Rengekyo and accept and promulgate it, far outweighs and manifests such a powerful and penetrating cause of liberation, emancipation of incalculable living beings as to erase prior karmic repercussions to the point of reaching self-enlightenment. That should be encouraging to us. How many errors do you look back on your younger life and think, what a moron I was, what a fool I was, what this or that? It doesn't matter. Well, it matters, but what matters far in excess of that is your discovery of Myoho Rengekyo and your pursuit of Bodhi. Right? Because your pursuit of Bodhi encounters the need to inspire others for their aspiration of Bodhi. And that outweighs all previous errors. Don't think of that as a license to be terrible. Rather, think of that as a permission, an ability, an ability you've had all along to do so much more easily for yourself and others. However, the larger portion of this chapter is dedicated to the young 8-year-old girl, daughter of the Naga King, becoming an enlightened Buddha in an immediate way by virtue of one great offering directly to the Buddha. Don't miss that part. It's not that you have to bring jewels to your butsudan. It's the sincerity, the depth of your commitment. Once again, Nichiren reminds us of this all the time, yeah? This is so amazing for so many reasons that I accept it is at least equal, if not more significant, than the story of Devadatta, especially for its time and place. This is an incredibly misogynistic society and time when the mere thought of a female to practice, let alone attain Buddhahood, was unthinkable. So much so, in fact, that the story includes a brief moment of the girl's transformation, transmigration, became male in order to then realize Buddhahood. For modern Buddhists, the title of this chapter should include the enlightenment of women, in my humble opinion. Renge, the simultaneous sowing of a seed and blossoming of the lotus flower, and the fact that this flower grows from a muddy swamp, this last feature is certainly demonstrated in the muddy swamp of Devadatta's past actions and completely overcome by virtue of the lotus flower and its immediate seeding as it blossoms. This unique seeding and blossoming is demonstrated in the 8-year-old girl's offering to the Buddha. Once again, the jewel makes its symbolic appearance. For Nichiren, this was a symbol of the cause or seed of enlightenment. Seed begets Buddhahood, and like the second property of the Daimoku, Renge, offering the seed manifests at the same moment of the blossoming of Buddhahood, and vice versa. Renge is the physical manifestation of the Myoho, initial law of the Daimoku or teaching of the Lotus Sutra. Myo, potential, is manifest, ho, in each moment. With the realm of form, this conversion of energy takes physical form and thereby the second property of Renge. This truth is the engine of life and is the teaching of the enlightenment of the Buddha, or Kyo. So this chapter is quite the synopsis of the Lotus Method and its mechanisms of life and our experience of this truth as Buddhahood. There you have it. The formula. And that takes us to chapter 13. Exhortation to maintain conviction and confidence. You might say the main ingredient in our achievement of Myoho Renge Kyo, of Bodai. Yeah. So once again, an important chapter, another veil removed for our capturing of enlightenment from ourselves, right? The lotus flower doesn't have to wait for a bee to pollinate it. The lotus flower doesn't have to wait for a farmer to pull it out of the ground and offer it to someone to display its beauty, its magnificence. No, it happens the moment it blossoms and seeds. Who's to say which is first? Doesn't matter. They happen at the same time. We invoke Buddhahood to experience Buddhahood. That we do on our own. With the infusion of the engine of life, which is already inherent in us, right? Tathagata. Thank you for listening. Please take a moment to like and subscribe. Hey, I want to ask something of you. The internet is going through a metamorphose. And Patreon, our friend Jack Conte, very convinced that Patreon, along with others, is on the forefront of finding a way to make, this is a school of Buddhism. But it's not a school of Buddhism without what we call a creator person in online terms, yes? And I guess that would fall to me because I'm creating these videos, creating these this resource, the website, the bookstore, all of it. The links in the description, along with links to Patreon. And Patreon, if you're a patron on Patreon, you've been seeing some changes happening there in the last few months. And it's trying to become a platform where those of you who are signed up as subscribed to this resource, who are, you know, determined to achieve your bodai and using this resource to the best of your assistance. He's trying to create a community of these core members that has value. Value in that we can discuss amongst one another. That exactly what I've been doing since 1995, but it's the internet is shifting toward that model rather than the old social model of let me see how many friends I can get, quote unquote, and amass all of this popularity, because that's really the system of Facebook, Google, so on and so forth, to stick advertising in there and make money. But that's not my goal. It's not the goal of many creators. We want to put our best creative efforts out for the benefit of others, right? It's a bodhisattva thing. So I don't just idly throw out videos so that I can push the algorithm up. Conversely, that's why I ask for your help on liking and subscribing, because that's how freaking YouTube works. It's a Google thing and ads, and I know it's annoying, but on Patreon, I offer the same videos. They're linked, actually, to YouTube. And Patreon wants to speak directly to those of you who are assiduous in this, who really, really want to support this channel. And there are, you guys are there. And many of you through Patreon, some directly through PayPal, but same difference. But to create a community of us, I don't know, hardcore practitioners, really, really working on our conviction toward Bodhi, I'm not sure how that's going to take shape. And I'm not sure what I could offer to make that, to solidify that vision. That's been my goal since the start, so I'm not sure what that will mean in the future. If you have ideas about this, I'd like to hear it. If not, it's okay. We'll find out sooner or later as that takes shape and whether or not it works for what we're trying to achieve with this resource. Yeah. In the meantime, practice, practice, practice. That's all that really matters. And keeping your conviction high, that's what we're here for. So take care of your health. And I will see you in the next video. Bye for now.